On Point, hosted by Peter Van Aartrijk. Conversations with interesting and informative experts on technology, branding, culture, social media marketing, and other great topics.
Hello again, everybody. I'm Peter Van Aartrijk, your host for On Point, brought to you by our good friends at Wells Media, which includes Carrier Management, Insurance Journal, and other fine publications. Our guest today is Jennifer Palmieri, who's Executive Vice President and Chief People Officer at Westfield. Welcome, Jen.
Thank you, Peter. Thrilled to be here.
Yes, I love this topic. I love this topic of people and culture and all things HR and where it's all headed with generations in the workforce, and want to learn what you have going on. But maybe you could start. Tell us a little bit about how you got into all this, your early career, and how you got to where you're thinking about people on more of a global stage now.
Yeah, well, thank you, Peter. So I fell into insurance right out of college. I had the great opportunity to do a co-op at Cigna, the global health insurer, and I spent almost 18 years there. So that was my entree into insurance and also HR. And Cigna, back in the late 90s, also had a property and casualty division, which they sold to Ace, which is now Chubb.
Yeah.
So I got exposure very early on in my career to PNC, but then for almost two decades was not closely tied to property and casualty, but then had the great opportunity in 2020 to bring it full circle and join Westfield. And so that's a little bit about my journey.
Yeah. Cigna, that's really good training ground. That was a big company. And you said you found your way. How did it come to be that you even started there? It's like an answer to an ad, or you just sought that job?
Yeah. So I went to Drexel University for my undergraduate studies. And one of the things that Drexel's just really well known for and does an excellent job at is their co-op program. So my first co-op, it's always been an insurance industry, interestingly, mm-hmm. And I can talk a little bit about that, but was at Reliance Insurance Company. Mm-hmm. And then my next one, I went to Cigna. And so it was really just through the university, career counseling, kind of academic division, and they had a super strong relationship with Cigna, and applied there with a number of other organizations, but was drawn to the industry, the company, and have regret the decision at all. It was to your point a phenomenal training ground and just a fascinating company and organization.
Yeah, Drexel. That makes sense. Drexel's in Philly, right? That's where okay, that's where there was that connection.
Yeah, they were headquartered in Philadelphia for many, many years, and then moved their headquarters probably over a decade ago to the Hartford, Connecticut area. But Cigna, Connecticut General and Insurance Company of North America, merged, and so that's how the acronym CIGNA came together.
Yes, right. I am proud and somewhat sad to say that I was around for that.
I know. I'm dating myself here too, Peter. So don't worry about that.
I know. I was a full-fledged print reporter back then. So I remember covering all that. That was a really big deal.
Huge. Yeah.
Yeah. That impacted a lot of independent agents back in those days. Yeah. So HR, and that's the thing about the insurance industry that a lot of people in Drexel and other universities don't realize, that it's not just about selling insurance or being an actuary. It's a business like any other business, and there's tons of opportunities. And were you always interested in the people side of this, like HR, like why HR?
Yeah. So I loved HR from an early age, really because, when I think about businesses and how they're fueled and how they're successful, it really does come down to two things, and it's people and culture. And specifically in financial services and the insurance industry, where, we're not necessarily building something, right? You're not manufacturing something. It's not about the latest, development or R&D or technology. And so the fuel of the organization is the people. And so I have always felt that human resources is just as strategic a function as the financial functions, as legal, as technology in an organization. And again, specifically focused my career more in the insurance sector and financial services because I think it's almost even more amplified in those industries.
So a lot of times, well, at least in the past, HR was always like, we used to call it like human resources back in way back in the day. I'm talking 70s and 80s. Over time, it's developed into more, and then obviously you're in the C-suite, so that's indicative of what I'm saying is that it's got much more strategy behind it and more of an understanding that you really got to figure out how to lead people, how to manage them, but also lead them and encourage them and recruit. We can get into all these topics. But how did it sort out for you as you went through the through different roles in HR? Maybe in the beginning you were looking at the 401k plan, and now it's much more than that. How does leadership come in your mind? And also, Westfield itself has evolved too from being a super regional PNC company, although always very well respected by agents over the years, into something much more around the world. So, how does that, how have you applied leadership to all of that?
Yeah, so I think Peter, you mentioned a lot of really important kind of components here. So maybe I'll start with just the evolution of the HR function because I think you're spot on. Many decades ago, it really was more of a personnel function. It was focused on just the basics of hiring, terminating, ensuring that people got paid and had benefits plans and were compliance. It was a very compliance focused function for many years. And over the last, I would say, 2 decades, to your point, it has become much more of a strategic enabling function for the business. And again, I think I had a good fortune early in my career to be at a super forward strategic thinking company. And the CEO had always said the two most important people by his side are his CFO and his CHRO. And so from a super early age, that was embedded in my philosophy around human resources and how that plays into an organization and its strength and growth and profitability and overall success. And so I've tried to parlay some of that into what I would say my leadership philosophy centers on within the HR area. And it's really on authenticity, shared accountability, and purpose. It's being able to lead with transparency and deeply listening. You really need to understand what motivates people in different areas. And so whether that's in Westfield Center, Ohio, or in our offices in the City of London or in Dubai, it's important to understand that what people are looking for and that they feel a sense of inclusion and belonging and really feel seen. And when that happens, really kind of amazing, cool things happen. You see people flourish and develop and transform companies, businesses, cultures in a way that is, just really exceptional. And so when I see those things happening, that's what inspires me and also is something that I try to think about from a philosophical approach as I'm leading and helping others lead.
Yeah, authenticity, shared accountability, and purpose. Those are really good. And you mentioned listening too. I think there's so much noise, not just in the world in the media, but just this. We're distracted as consumers and associates in a workforce by our phones is one problem. But I just think people are distracted today. So. What have you learned about listening? Because I know you can There's a difference between hearing and listening. There's a difference between kind of nodding your head when someone's talking, but if you're thinking about the next thing, you're not really listening per se. Like, is there anything you've learned? Because I think that is such a good quality. If you can listen and really get around the table and understand what world, you know, what pain, everybody's got pain, you know, everybody's got joy and pain and they got hopes and dreams and so forth. But how do you, is there anything you've learned about being able to listen? Because I just love what you said there.
Yeah, I appreciate the question, and I'll be very honest. You know, listening is probably truly listening, and listening with patience and understanding is hard, right? It is challenging. And I would tell you that's something I focus on almost every day, and I, you know, probably not maybe one of my greatest strengths and one that I continue to work on, because to exactly your point, we live in such a highly distracted world. And, you know, as a, you know, executive, there's millions of things happening at the same time, and meetings and demands and, you know, messages coming in different vehicles. And so really focusing is important. So one of the things I learned really early in my career, and I bring it back to my mind almost daily, is it was an old leadership philosophy. It was someone named Sen Delaney, and it was, you know, be here now. You have to focus on the now. And how do you do that? And, you know, sometimes that is just turning off your phone, or, you know, shutting down your computer, or, you know, not kind of looking at all of the various things and being in the moment, right? Focusing on the moment. And it sounds so simple when I say it, and I'm sure people listening hopefully can empathize. But the truth is, it's actually very, very hard. But when you can do that, the nuggets of knowledge, of understanding, you know, the ability to actually be empathetic and, you know, understand people's challenges, or really even understanding what the business need is. You know, one of the things that I think about often is, you know, you've got a lot of meetings, there's a lot of presentations, people spend tons of time putting together information. And sometimes it's about listening to what is the problem we're actually trying to solve here. And some of the most simple questions could be the most profound. But you don't get there unless you pause and listen. And so, yeah, I mean, it's important. I know I'm certainly still on a journey there, but try really hard at it every day.
Same here. Same here, Jen. I'll tell you, it is really hard. But I tell you, anybody listening who is in a producer at an independent agency, for example, like being able to listen to the customer and just take a beat and be present and listen to what their pain is and what problems they have versus necessarily what products you're trying to sell. I mean, it applies to everything in the insurance industry and just as human beings, being able to really listen. One thing that I've just been fascinated with, I've been doing a lot of reading. My colleague and I did a presentation at the Insurance Marketing Communication Association in June about the different generations in the workforce, and it must be from your perspective, leading people at Westfield. By the way, how many employees are at the company? I should have asked you that early on.
Yeah, we are about 3,500 employees globally right now. So yeah, we've grown pretty significantly over the last several years from both a revenue perspective. We're nearing 5 billion, 3,500 employees. And you mentioned it earlier, you know, we were known for, you know, I don't know, 173 years as a, you know, Midwest super regional, you know, carrier, and we've evolved now to a national player, you know, with their growth in our specialty business, and international with the acquisition of the Lloyd's of London syndicate. So yeah, we've been on a fun journey the last few years.
So I was starting to say that with all the different generations in the workforce, and when you think about those 3,500 people, they're at different stages of their career. You know, some of them are more entry level, some are mid-career, and some are more senior, middle managers and so forth. How do you, there's been so much written and spoken about the challenge, of all the boomers that for decades have run the insurance industry. I'm a boomer, so I can say that honestly. You know, kind of the end of our of our working lives. There's going to be a need for promotion from within, like training and all that stuff, but also looking out for new talent to backfill those positions. And how do you even get your arms around that, Jen? That just seems like rather daunting. Is there anything you've learned about recruiting and talent development over the years?
Yes, absolutely. And to your point, we now have at least five generations working side by side in the workforce. And I actually wrote an article about this a couple of years ago, but it's really unprecedented. And clearly, each brings something valuable. Whether they're a boomer and they have just deep, significant experience and history and ability to bring different perspectives, or they're kind of highly digitally fluent and purpose driven and focused on flexibility, et cetera. So it is a little bit of a conundrum, but I think that the learning is really being able to, and the key to this is creating a culture that honors these differences and somehow finding that shared purpose, right? So how can all of these generations and perspectives and preferences, right? And how they grew up and their experiences, how do we create something that we can all harness together? And at Westfield, we do that by fostering dialogue, mentorship across generations, and again, try to bring that sense of belonging that transcends age. And we do that by our employee resource groups. We do that through a number of our different management practices, and overall, really just the culture that we're trying to create at the organization.
I think you're right with the five generations. I do know a gentleman, Jerry Sullivan, who's part of that silent generation, the senior generation, who's mid-80s, and he goes to work every day in LA. He's a reinsurance broker, astonishing work habits. But it for sure, the new one, the Gen Zs, mostly professionals in their 20s, are coming in. I kind of This is me talking, not necessarily you, but I'm kind of excited about the future of our industry with the Gen Zs. On, you know, when if they can get interested in joining the industry and telling their friends, I think they'll find it to be kind of a cool place to work with, like you mentioned, flexibility, decent pay, very stable. They do appreciate stability. The industry gives back. It's got incredible purpose, and you can usually see how you're doing at any given time, because it's all about, obviously, you're selling a product people need, but you're tracking your progress in terms of like, for example, how many policies you're selling and your retention and so forth. So do you agree? Do you feel like, as you're talking to young people who are interested in joining Westfield, that there's a spark there? Maybe we should feel really good about that new generation?
Absolutely. And I would tell you that we focus a significant amount of efforts on that early career recruiting. And it's at times a bit of an uphill battle, only because insurance is not necessarily as sexy of an industry as technology or what younger folks are reading on social media channels and what have you. But if we're able to connect with that generation, and we do that through, deep relationships at universities and various organizations, you can almost hook them early on, right? Because they're such a compelling story, and it is innovative, and it's so core to the way our global economy works, right? And so, insurance is the key to making the world go round at some point. And once we're able to, communicate that to early career individuals or even just students, and show the career path and show the stability, They don't always necessarily value the stability immediately, but I think, the more conversations we end up having with people and the earning potential. I mean, there's significant earning potential for individuals. That coupled with the purpose-driven component of it, with helping people, in their deepest times of need, sense of security and purpose, and those things resonate. We're able to craft a pretty compelling story and get people excited. But yeah, we need that, that younger generation to fuel our future. And so we do a lot, as I said, with intern programs, with trainee programs, really focusing on that early career pipeline to get people into the industry. We've got employees and leaders who are teaching classes at universities, in risk management and other disciplines, telling the Westfield story, because they're passionate about it, and it does make a difference. It makes a big difference.
I know the concept of employer brand, which relates to what you're just saying, is historically speaking sort of new, because they're I think the competition, and it ebbs and flows, but the competition for really good talent is a real thing. And then within the insurance industry itself, it's also a real thing, even more, maybe even more acute. What have you found that works in simple things like the language we use in job descriptions and things, like to make the West, not just insurance, but obviously Westfield, sound more compelling to candidates?
Yeah, so we've done quite a bit of work on our employer brand, and we focus on reflecting our purpose, so caring for our customers, communities, and each other is fairly core to some of that branding. We have also learned that being authentic really travels well, and candidates everywhere, can tell that our story is real. We do also like to do a lot of storytelling and examples. We highlight our culture too, trust, development, and impact, not just, the benefits that we're offering or the locations or the products that we're selling, but the broader, greater story, around, what it is like to be part of a company with a, under almost 178-year-old history, the lives that we've touched and impacted through the years, and how someone can, come to an organization like this, and, whether they choose to work for us for 3, 4, 5 years, or they spend, 30 years, 40 years of their career here, they can, it'll be valuable and they'll gain something from it. So, it's a lot about customizing messaging. We talked about the generations before, and so it's tricky business, ensuring that you're reaching everyone, and we don't reach everyone, right? So we have to be true to our story and share what we think makes sense. And I think the people that it resonates with, that becomes that those become the people that, want to work with us or want to work for us, and end up being, successful and having, very fulfilling, promising careers and experiences.
Yeah, I guess it's that balance between people who are near the end of their career and people are coming in, and like it would be really nice if boomers on the way out could help with the succession planning. I think that's to me, see, I mean, I've never been in your position there, but our company is pretty small, but it seems like there's so much institutional knowledge, and you combine that with some youthful exuberance about how doing things differently, different workflows, for example, would be a real good recipe for like ongoing success, so that the boomers aren't just cut off, but they're somehow leveraged in the later years, where they could impart some, like I said, succession planning. It doesn't always come down to staying somewhere 5 years or 15 years. It might just be 1 or 2 years, but I think there could be a lot of knowledge, and a lot of value to the company as well as the employee. That's more of a soliloquy than a question, I guess.
Yeah, no, but
But
I guess I do have a comment to that. One of the things that we focus on a lot at Westfield, and I think has been secret to some of our talent success, is Really focusing on cross-functional and cross-business type rotations and experiences. So to your point around, even later career employees who have just a wealth of experience and perspective, I can think of, almost three examples right now where we have taken someone who was probably, a year or 2 years away from retirement and actually put them into a different role to give them various experience to allow someone who was on the succession plan for their role to step up into it earlier, so giving them that development, that on the job training in a safe environment, but allowing them to spread their wings without the incumbent being there, but then honoring the incumbents. History, experience, et cetera, in another role. I have one on my team right now, our head of talent management or talent management space, where we just did that. And the woman who's retiring, she's really just so thrilled about this new experience and how she's gaining from it, and seeing her successor thrive. It's just a win-win, and it's a cool example of being creative with rotations and experiences and really being thoughtful about how you can best use transferable skills, because there's just so many different opportunities to do it.
Very cool. Yes, agree that I love those examples. Yeah. So one thing that I've again, it's not a secret. It's been in the news a lot since COVID. Actually, COVID kind of accelerated this idea that we could work anywhere. And it seems like this I wouldn't call it a battle, but like kind of like a, hey guys, we got to reconcile how often we see each other in person versus remote. I know there's a lot of studies that have been done about, human beings are social animals and we got to be near each other. And yet there's something really good about the efficiencies of working from home with a schedule. People were very productive during COVID. It was quite stunning. I think they were working harder than ever trying to make it all work. So if you think about your company, for example, there's a lot of people all over the place. Some are in the office, some are not. Some are there sometimes. How do you see this all playing out? What have you found that works? Because managing the culture is obviously got to be on your mind too, right? Managing people, managing culture.
Yeah, so I would say, we're on a journey like all companies in terms of moving from more of a remote post-COVID to a hybrid, kind of more focused, intentionally on-site type organization. So what we've really kind of narrowed in on is we do believe that it's important to be in person and to have connections where you are, physically with other leaders, employees. That's where true, innovation happens, relationship building happens. We talk a lot about mentoring in the younger generation, and for them just to be able to see and feel in a 3D environment how other leaders interact and behave. You don't get that experience fully, via the video. And we also value the technology and the ability to do things across borders with, Teams and all the video conferencing and flexibility that has helped us and that we all learned to be so successful within COVID. So we're on a journey like anyone else, but we absolutely do value the relationship component of the culture piece. But, we respect and embrace that not it doesn't happen to happen all the time, right? So we focus a lot on being intentional around this. And so making sure that, there's moments that matter and that as a leader that you're creating those for your team while still giving them the flexibility to do, to manage their lives in a way that people value and can, take care of their whole selves, their family, their professional lives, their personal selves. So, it's not a one size fits all type of recipe, but that's how we think about it.
Yeah. And certainly that's a challenge for the worker in the company. There's challenges all around. There's other challenges too, like the generational differences, the whole skill gap with the looming impact of artificial intelligence. And what do you think is going to happen in the insurance industry on the people side as you look down the road? Like what sorts of things have you been reading and reflecting on?
Yeah, I mean, I think the beautiful thing about the insurance industry is that it's longstanding, and it'll be here for future generations to come. And I think that's one of the best things about what we do, and the services that we provide to people. I think how we do that is going to continue to shift, and change. And so I think, the next 5 to 10 years will really be defined by being adaptable. I believe that AI will change our jobs. It will change how we work. I believe it will help us significantly, work faster, smarter, and it'll allow humans to do better things, right? More strategic work, more thoughtful work. And the work that is focused on, judgment and creativity and empathy. AI should enable us to be able to do those things in new and different ways. So, will it have an impact on our long-term workforce? Absolutely. I personally am super excited about what that impact is going to be. And I think the more that we can help our employees not kind of be afraid of it, but rather embrace it, it is that secret to success. And of course, there's challenges. There's, compliance and legal issues and confidentiality things and legislative items that we all need to contemplate. And I have confidence we'll work through all of those, and it'll continue to be, just a great tool for us in the future. So I'm bullish about AI and technology. I would say Westfield has really embraced it in a lot of different ways. We've got, many different use cases across our organization where we're utilizing it in a, safe environment in our underwriting areas, in our claims areas, in our policy processing and admin areas, in HR. I mean, we're using it every day in HR, whether it's to help us with job descriptions, learning plans, development plans, writing, communications, being able to provide crisper, clearer messaging. So yeah, lots of different ways that I think it's helping us, and will continue to.
I certainly hope that you're right. The glass is half full. There's a lot of fear and loathing about it, but I think the I tend to agree with you. This one feels more exponential. In terms of change, I remember, this is really dating me. There was, you said compliance. The insurance industry was worried about email. They were worried about websites. They were worried about the internet. They probably worried about the fax machine. And I know that independent agents were worried about the computer, period. Even just the PC before it was even connected to other PCs, because they didn't want people on their computers. They wanted people talking to people. It's interesting how, like customers, and it's interesting how there was like, oh, let's be sure all this technology doesn't take away the people side of this. And that's the same thing that's going on right now with AI. It's fascinating to me, and how it's all going to shake out. Who knows, right? But I think you're right. It is exciting how it can reduce tasks, especially mundane tasks. And there's so much of it in insurance. We both know that. Oh my gosh, all the stuff that happens with all the words and the policies and the contracts and all the numbers and all that stuff. What would we do with our time? That to me is the fun part. Okay, so let's say all the mundane stuff is taken care of. What do we do with our time? What would we do? Maybe we would spend more time, like you said, listening. I don't
Yes,
know.
nice.
The
Yeah.
possibilities are endless, right?
Yep, for
So,
sure.
as you look back, I think it's so cool, Jen, that you came out of college and insurance somehow found you. You found it. But is there anything, any advice you'd give your younger self as you think back on your career?
How long do we have, Peter?
Right.
No, yes. I think, one of the things that I think about is, if I were to talk to my younger self, I'd say stop worrying about trying to have all the answers or trying to be able to prove something or, and ask better questions, right? I'd tell my younger self to really focus on being more curious, asking more around the why, and just being more thoughtful and intentional. I think, when you're younger, you're really, well, at least I was ambitious and anxious and wanted to, hit everything out of the park. And sometimes it's okay to just to pause and be a little bit more thoughtful and understand more. So it's probably very, very simple advice at the end of the day, but
Oh, that's great. No, I mean, ask more questions. Everybody, especially in the business world, a lot of times people say they feel like they have to have all the answers, you know? But who's got all the
yeah.
answers? No one has all the answers.
And
In
ask
fact,
better questions, really good
it's
questions,
better.
right?
Yeah. Tell me more. Tell me, and the follow-up ones too. Tell me more about that.
Oh, that's one of my
Open-ended.
favorite now.
Tell me more about that. I know. I love that one. Yeah, that works really good in customer experience research and research of any kind, whether it's one-on-one in an HR setting you might be in, or you're talking to customers about the experience. Like, tell me more about that. Why do you say that? And can you give me an example of that? That's really good early career advice that I could have used as well. So, well, Jen, thank you so much for your time. I know you're busy. And I wish you all the best. Westfield is a fascinating company, and I wish you all the best with all the global stuff you have going on, and managing those five generations. If you got any hacks, I'll follow up with you. I'd love to learn how you do it, because I don't have all the answers, but I am excited. I have two kids, one millennial, one Gen Z, and they're out to change the world. Both those girls are out to change the world like you are. So
Well,
maybe the following.
good for them. That's great. And thank you so much, Peter. I really enjoyed this. This was great.
Thank you. Have a good day.
This has been On Point with Peter Van Aartrijk, a podcast presentation of Wells Media Group.